This is Inside Wealth, the ultimate disclosure on Talk 910 KNEW. Living a healthy and happy life is about awakening to matters of your wallet, balanced by concerns of your heart. Now, Stu Zimmerman.
Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome back to Inside Wealth. We're talking about the wealth that just can't be taxed because it's inside of you. And we all know that this is the time of year where the taxes are coming on and we don't quite feel as wealthy financially or perhaps the stress level is up a little bit more than it typically is just because we're writing those checks that are absolutely imposed on us. We're not sure exactly where it's going, exactly what it's funding, and exactly what our return is on all of it, right? We really don't know all of that. So we're going to take a look at it today, not so much from the tax angle, but take a look at our financial wealth because, let's face it, okay, as much as the money is not ultimately who we are, that's not the inside wealth. The inside wealth is a joy for living and an appreciation for this moment and bringing the best of who we are as human beings. That said, there's nothing like a little coin in our pocket, at least in this society, so we can go out and have some fun with it, enjoy our lives with it, and even improve the lives of others with it. So today, we're going to take a hard look at our economy. So this really is a bit of a special program dedicated to our economy. And with us today in studio is Steve McClellan. And he's been a Wall Street analyst for more than three decades and at Merrill Lynch and Institutional Investor All-American Research Team for 19 years, which, by the way, that's like being an all-star for 19 years if you want to talk about it in baseball terms or anything else. So to have an all-star analyst with us in studio here is a rare feat of ours, frankly, and it's a real cue to you all to listen up. He's also the author of Full of Bull, and we're going to find out exactly how deep that bull extends and how full it is with Steve in a moment. And after that, we will have our Brain Trust member, George McCown, who manages a few billion dollars of private equity at McCown DeLu. He's also the chairman of Outward Bound and the chairman emeritus of the World Business Academy. Also on the board of overseers of the Hoover Institution and a self-proclaimed Republican. So when you have all that together, he has his own ideas and insights in terms of where the economy is headed. So this is a show you need to listen to in its entirety. And if you miss any part of it, you can come to InsideWealth.net. That's InsideWealth.net. And catch the whole show. And here we go, and we're going to start. Because we have such great guests, we're not going to give you a bowl of stew today. We're just going to give you a little cup, but a sample nonetheless. So here we go. This week's Cup of Stew is really to honor the title of Full of Bull and see exactly how far it extends. Because I'd invite you to consider there's a rumor here. There's a rumor that there was a golden calf once upon a time, in the time of Moses. And that somehow, that was only in the time of Moses. Well, I want to let you all know that this week's Cup of Stew honors that this, in fact, golden calf has never died. The golden calf is alive and well and has been for our entire lives. Just like our financial system has evolved, where once it was barter, and then it went to gold or metal, and then we had a currency, a paper currency, backed by a gold standard. And since then, the gold standard went away, and it just came to what's called bureaucratic fiat in terms of just determining how much dollars can be printed. And now, of course, we're going beyond paper because so many of our transactions are now electronic, so that even the paper is dissolving. So, too, has the golden calf. The golden calf has become increasingly less visible in many ways, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't operate our own psyches, because I think we all know that we spend so much of our time and our lives focusing on making money, using it as a scorecard, and when we see it receding and we see the possibility of recession looming, whether you have millions of dollars or not, it can be really disconcerting. Well, this program is really to help us once and for all get that golden calf out of here, okay? It's done. It's time. And with that, we have Steve McClellan in-house with us here today in studio to talk about the economy and, more specifically, his book, Full of Bull, which, by the way, has also been a bestseller on Amazon. So he's getting it out there. He's a brilliant guy, a good friend, and a great thinker. Steve, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely.
So let's get right into it. And first, let's start with your book. And why did you write it in the first place?
I spent 32 years on Wall Street. The first day after I had left Wall Street, I was on an airplane next to a fellow stranger passenger. He saw my bag tag, a business card that said Merrill Lynch. He started grilling me. I immediately realized there's millions of people out here that take Wall Street literally. They have no clue about the code and the misleading Wall Street practices and guidance. Things like the fact that the streets are very bad at stock picking, the opinion rating system on the street are very misleading, and the favorable bias and several other factors. And I said, my God, I think we really need to enlighten them. And that's one thing I've tried to do with this book, Full of Bull, is, which no other book seems to do, is tell it like it is about all these confusing, conflicted Wall Street practices that are so detrimental to sound investing.
Well, so why don't you give us some examples in terms of some of these business practices that we would otherwise take for granted and make our hard-earned dollar investment decisions with that, in fact, you know, mislead us?
Yeah. Individuals seem to listen to their broker's advice as if he's a unbiased, objective, astute financial advisor. And they don't realize the first and foremost thing, that Wall Street is eternally, absolutely has this favorable bias. Of all the investment stock ratings on the street right now, only 5% of the stocks are rated sell, even in this bad bear market. 49% are buy, 46% are neutral. And when the market's going down, they don't call it a down market or a falling market. They call it a correction. But, of course, they don't call a rising market a mistake. And it's like that. A falling market like we have now is called volatility. When we roll over into a recession like is going on right now, they call it negative growth. They don't call it a decline. So I think investors are so misled by this eternal optimism on Wall Street. It's kind of like, bottom line, going into your car dealer and asking him, gee, do you think I should buy a car? And get, you know how objective and unbiased car dealers are. Okay.
So it's primarily self-serving for the analyst community to have an upbeat opinion as well as an upbeat rosy forecast for that matter.
Absolutely, because the again, individuals don't understand that the main audience for brokerage firms and securities analysts on Wall Street are not these individuals, but they are the big institutions, the hedge funds and the mutual funds and the pension funds and so forth. And that's the audience they play to. And, of course, they own a lot of stocks, in their portfolios massively, and they don't appreciate when a brokerage firm or an analyst downgrades it to a sell. So they get very upset. So that's a systemic built-in inhibitor. And also the corporations represented by the stocks that the analysts have to have relationships with all those executives. And you can imagine their reaction when an analyst goes to a very negative opinion. They close off the analyst, shut him out, and badmouth them and so forth. And so the analyst, again, has this systemic built-in situation where they're very reticent to ever be negative on a stock. Worst case, they're neutral.
Well, you know, putting my feet in the shoes of an executive for a minute, if I know there's going to be a few hard quarters, but really believe in the underlying premise of this company in the long term, then actually having the stock pull back at a given point in time and perhaps get a few more options at a lower strike price may not be the worst thing in the world.
Absolutely. I spend a whole chapter talking about executives and executive behavior, and I list a lot of the favorable traits that if investors notice and observe in executives, it's a pretty good endorsement of to buy the stock. And one of the main ones is forthright candidness. And if they actually admit to and talk about and go over the negatives, that gives them a lot of credibility. So you really believe when they're positives. A lot of management, on the contrary to that, are just you know, just like Wall Street analysts, hype, you know, always managing the stock rather than managing the company, and eternal optimists, kind of like a PR machine. And, of course, those are the kinds of companies that you have to be pretty careful about as an investor.
Can you give us a good example, Steve, of a company or a specific CEO who has gone out of his way to be particularly candid, even in if the news isn't so positive?
Well, I've always thought John Chambers at Cisco has been one such very credible leader. There are quite a few others. I always thought Bill Gates at Microsoft, we'd go to analyst meetings over the years, he would accentuate all the negatives to the point where we'd almost kind of start downplaying these negatives because he was overly focused on balancing the equation. So I think some of the best leaders in American business have been just such forthright, objective kind of purveyors of their message, and that really is what I'm looking for when I invest in a company.
We're here with Steve McClellan, who is a longtime all-star analyst at Merrill Lynch in the technology sector. And he wrote a fantastic book called Full of Bull. We're really taking a look at what is true and what, in fact, is bull from the investment community here. Because we're at an interesting point in time right now, Steve, where it's not only full of bull, but it could be full of bear. Well, what are your thoughts in terms of the overall economic reality as you see it in the moment? Is this cycle like all other cycles?
Well, I definitely think we're in a major downtrend part of a cycle. People always forget because every 10 years you have a new generation of junior analysts and portfolio managers on Wall Street that are hadn't been through the last down cycle. I suspect this time, given all the plethora array of problems that are so widespread, we're going to have a long down cycle, a year and a half or two recession and stagflation and difficult, horrendous government deficits and so forth. So I just think, you know, the Wall Street optimism is, oh, second half of this year, everything will be fine. We'll see the upturn. Oh, we're already bouncing along the bottom. It's not going to get any worse. Oh, you know, and I think this is going to be like we had in the early 90s. I lived through this actually horrendous bear market in the early 70s. No one on Wall Street hardly remembers that. But 3 years, after 3 years have expired in the early 70s, where the market was down 50% at the end of that time. I don't know the market's going down 50% from here, but I just think we're in a bear market and it's going to be around through the end of next year.
Mm. So we're here with Steve McClellan. And Steve, you mentioned the word stagflation, which is something that really hasn't been in our lexicon, I don't think, since the early 70s. And by stagflation, just for everybody out there who may not have been around back then, we're talking about a climate which is inflationary, which means prices are going up, but also recessionary in terms of job loss, more people unemployed, and things being more difficult and being stretched in both directions, right?
Absolutely. If you look at all the expenses that normal people have to pay out for gasoline, for food, and a lot of normal things, they're all going up. If the true numbers that we see, the government is just like Wall Street, eternally optimistic, downplaying all the negatives. If we had true inflation indicators, they would be pretty healthy. Inflation occurring, healthy meaning pretty notable material inflation going on. And of course, yeah, we have a recession. We have jobs declining. We have corporate profits rolling over. All sorts of indications. So I just think it's going to be a very sobering period ahead, and I don't think people are willing to admit it yet that we're even in a bear market particularly.
So one of the things you just mentioned, Steve, is that this notion of full of bull is not just limited to the Wall Street analyst community. It sounds like it's pervasive, even, dare I say, in the government in terms of the economic indicators and the way they're presented.
Absolutely. I heard one of the Fed chairmen recently, I guess the current one, saying, oh, negative growth. Oh, also another word he uses for a recession. They they're scared to death of using the R word. They call it a contraction. Well, you know, I mean, they're painting everything with rose-colored glasses as well. And so I just think investors, and I really primarily focusing, obviously, in the book about Wall Street, just need to be aware of all this so that they can make their own decisions, become their own analysts, and not be dependent on Wall Street to for guidance and any objective kind of financial viewpoints.
Okay, friends, we're going to be right back with more from Steve McClellan, where we'll get more into some of the practices that may be a little either deceptive or just not completely forthright from the Wall Street community, as well as some things you can do with your money right here on Inside Wealth. We'll have more Inside Wealth right here on Talk Radio 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. A business, a mission, and a message. Inside Wealth can deliver that message to an intelligent, insightful, and mindful audience. Being a sponsor on Inside Wealth, you become an important player in a win-win agreement where nobody has to lose. Invest in your business and your purpose by calling 707-425-2360 or go to InsideWealth.net and sponsor radio that makes a difference. Inside Wealth, the greatest show on earth.
Imagine, you're lying in your bed stranded because you can't walk. Your friends and family go about their day, but you're left behind. You can't move without dragging your lifeless legs across the ground, stumbling every step, struggling to carry the entire weight of your body on two arms. This is reality for more than 100 million children and adults worldwide. They simply can't afford the one thing that will change everything, a wheelchair. We're the Wheelchair Foundation. We deliver hope, mobility, and freedom to impoverished people across the globe. And now you can be part of this great mission. A small gift from you can buy a brand new wheelchair and set a suffering person free. You won't believe how little it takes. Transform a life instantly. To make a donation or to find out how you can help, call the Wheelchair Foundation.
Call toll free. 888-378-3839. 888-378-3839.
Are you looking to help give back to the community but need great flexibility? Tony La Russa's Animal Rescue Foundation, ARF, has a flexible volunteer position tailored just for you. You can share in the triumph of helping an orphan kitten or puppy, as well as receive unconditional love. ARF needs volunteer fosters to provide a little extra time or attention until these animals can be adopted into their forever homes. ARF will provide the food, medication, and support, and you provide the love. Check out ARF.net or call 925-256-1ARF today. Please give puppies and kittens another chance.
Are you in debt? Do you need help reducing your credit card debt? If you're struggling to make monthly payments, falling behind, using one card to pay off another, then get out of debt and get cash back with Debt Relief Solutions. Debt Relief Solutions recommend companies that offer cash back programs just for paying your bills on time each month. They'll put you in touch with experts to help you lower your monthly payments, reduce your interest rates, stop those harassing phone calls, and pay off your credit card debt. Debt Relief Solutions shows you how to get out of debt fast with one simple monthly payment. Save thousands while becoming debt-free and get cash back. Call Debt Relief Solutions today. Get cash back just for paying your bills on time. Certain restrictions apply. Services not available in all states. Now is the time to get out of debt. Call Debt Relief Solutions now and start your savings today.
Call 800-527-7300. That's 800-527-7300.
We have more Inside Wealth and Out right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. We're back with Steve McClellan, former analyst at Merrill Lynch, 19-time All-Star with Institutional Investors Research Analysts, which is, I got to tell you once again, if you're just new to the program here or joining us today right now, being an analyst and an All-Star with Institutional Investor for, on their research team for 19 years, you know, that's akin to, let's say, a Cal Ripken or a Tony Gwynn. Okay, now I'm presuming you're a baseball fan, you know, or a Joe Montana. Okay, very few analysts really knock the ball out of the park like this year after year after year.
And Steve has done this for 19 years, ranked as like the number one analyst on Wall Street in his sector in the technology field. And he wrote a book, which has been a bestseller on Amazon, called Full of Bull, where it really kind of opens the kimono a little bit here behind the Wall Street machine of the investment community, the analyst buy and sell recommendations, the inherent biases, and some of the misinformation that we all receive. So, Steve, we talked last segment about one practice in terms of having this natural upward bias because it's in their best interest to keep the machine going, so they have very few sell recommendations, even as they can reasonably expect times to be difficult. So, are there any other practices you'd like to identify?
Absolutely. By the way, all those accolades, they sure don't help me in my golf game, I'll tell you. I think the other practice that is particularly investors really need to be aware of is the very misleading nature of the stock opinion rating systems. What is a neutral or a hold? When an investment firm goes from a buy rating to a hold, a lot of investors think, oh, okay, that's fine, I'll hold the stock. Or he's neutral, that's fine. That is a very negative a signal to sell the stock. That means the analysts and the firm are very negative, but they wouldn't dare use the big bad S word, sell word. The great example, some firms use outperform and underperform, and what does that mean? A major firm, maybe, I forget, 8 months ago, Toll Brothers, they had a outperform recommendation on it, rating, at $29, and their price target objective was $23, a decline of $6, and they had outperform. Well, when flushed out a little bit, what they were trying to indicate is, we think the stock will go down $6, all right, and you'll lose money on this, but it won't be as bad as the rest of the home building stocks. It'll outperform them. So a lot of help that is for investors to hear that. And that is so typical of the rating system. So I think the converse, of course, bottom line here is that if a rare sell a recommendation moves up to a neutral, that's a seriously positive, actually, buy recommendation, clothed and encoded in Wall Street terms. So I think investors need to be aware of this confusing, misleading rating systems. There's others as well.
So what I hear you saying here, Steve, if we could just kind of crystallize it, we're hearing two things. First of all, it's a lot of these recommendations are directional in nature. When you go from a sell to a hold, that's more powerful than going from a buy to a hold. If a buy to a hold is tantamount to a sell, and sell to hold is a tantamount to a buy. So it's a matter of direction in terms of their degree of commitment to the stock.
Absolutely,
that's
correct.
That's one thing. And the other thing I heard has to do with price targets. If they have a price target that's a buck higher, or dare I say several bucks lower, it doesn't make a difference what the rating is. You don't want to be there.
The price targets are specious. I used to make them on Wall Street myself in my reports. They're pulled out of the air. If you want to really pound the table as a Wall Street firm or an analyst on a stock, you put a hugely high price objective on it to help tell your story. When you're negative first of all, no reports rarely ever give a downside, worst case, downside price target objective. And when they're negative, they rarely do it either. So, I mean, these price targets, you can't pay any attention to them.
Okay, so in the case you gave with Toll Brothers with $29 and price target at $23.
And they said outperform.
Well, obviously that's completely inconsistent. That makes no sense unless they're outperforming the market or, as you mentioned, the group, which is going to be down 50%. So if it's only down 20%, congratulations.
And every brokerage firm on the street has a different rating system, and good luck in trying to compare and contrast. I think the other thing that maybe is related to that is that Wall Street is notoriously bad at stock picking, the analysts on the street. Here's another example. Major firm, one of the big five, Countrywide. They had a buy rating on it from 40 all the way down to 9. When it was at 9 a few months ago, they went to a neutral on it at 9. Not a sell, a neutral, a hold, okay? Now it's at 5 or 6. That was very helpful.
So are you talking about the analyst consensus or one particular firm?
No, one particular brokerage firm, major firm.
Did they have a banking relationship with this company or some other conflict of interest that would otherwise keep it afloat?
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation. But my point here is that the street They've done all sorts of studies on this, and the analysts and brokerage firms are very poor at in terms of their track record on stock recommendations. And why, you ask, why would that be? Because that's not what analysts on Wall Street are expected or paid to do. That's not in their real job description in any major way. Their big audience, I mentioned earlier, is these institutions, these hedge funds, these mutual funds, these state pension funds, and so forth. Those big portfolio managers don't want analysts making buy and sell recommendations. And when asked or polled, what do you use Wall Street Research analysts for, out of 12 things that are very useful to them, ranked 10th out of 12 is stock picking. So those major sophisticated portfolio managers know better than to use the street for stock picking. They don't want the street doing stock picking for them, and therefore it's not a skill. It's like asking a quarterback to make an open field tackle. That's not really in his job description. He's not very good at it, so don't expect him to be very good at it.
Well, you know, Steve, that leads us to another question here, because so many of us actually have delegated our individual stock picking to professionals. I'll put that in quotes, whether it's mutual fund managers or other either hedge funds or other wealth managers in one form or another, where it's, you know, commingled accounts or what have you, institutional investors in one form or another. Are they more equipped to navigate through all the bull that's being tossed out from Wall Street?
Well, let's hope they're a little more equipped and in tune with some of this Wall Street practices that are so misleading. I'm not so sure they are totally steeped in it, really. Now, the insiders on Wall Street are those portfolio managers at the big mutual funds, but that's not – you're talking about an investment counseling, investment advisor that would handle an individual's account. They're somewhere in between, and I think they are more objective than the brokerage firm itself. So it's like going to Consumer Reports if you're buying a car rather than to a car dealer. So to that degree, absolutely, I think they probably have a better track record at advising on what stocks to own and investing. So absolutely.
Okay. And once again, I heard you also say that perhaps some of the largest mutual funds, and let's say someone like a Fidelity, for example, which has more money under management than anybody else or close to it, is better equipped possibly to navigate through, or at least more aware to extract the information that they want to make the investment decisions with, as opposed to just taking everything that's being shoved out.
Yes, they are more aware of all this Wall Street practices, and therefore they know what to not listen to, what to avoid, and not get misled and so forth. Absolutely true. They're very well equipped to make their own stock recommendations, their own stock picking. However, I don't really believe in mutual funds, and my book tries to make you individuals a fisherman rather than getting fish from your broker, a rotten fish from your broker. But everyone says, well, invest in mutual funds. Mutual funds are mediocrity. Half of them go up every year and half of them go down every year. They perform pretty much like the market. And if you think you can find the mutual fund that's going to outperform for 5 or 10 years in a row, good luck. Because if they've outperformed for 2 or 3 years in a row and you put your money there, they probably are due to underperform the following year when you get in there. So I don't really believe in mutual funds. And, of course, they have a lot of hands tied behind their back themselves. They have to buy very large name stocks in very large quantities. They can't maneuver. They also are very trading-oriented, just like Wall Street. They don't invest in stocks. They trade stocks. They rent stocks. And what I try to tell the individuals is invest in stocks. Hold them for long periods. You know, be value-oriented. The mutual funds are an extension, almost an arm of the brokerage firms, and therefore have a lot of disadvantages, whereas the individuals have some advantages themselves that they can avail themselves of.
We're here again with Steve McClellan, former analyst, all-star analyst at Merrill Lynch, and also author of a phenomenal book called Full of Bull. So part of your book has to do with helping to navigate through all the bull that's being tossed our way. And the other part of the book has to do with some strategy that all of us could employ in terms of discerning where we could possibly find these value investments and these companies where we can invest in a management team that we can trust?
Yeah, I spent half the book on that, and the place I start in is I tell the individuals, invest, don't trade. Hold stocks long-term, 5 years, not short-term. You know, do the opposite to what Wall Street does. Be value-oriented, low PE multiple, value-conscious, not momentum-oriented. Be steadfast, don't react. In fact, I kind of make humor of the fact, because I give a few talks here and there about this, and I say, the best advice I can give you most cases is do nothing. Don't react. Don't trade. And so then I really lay out a lot of what I think are pretty sound investment strategies, which are quite different than what you usually hear from most of the consensus. Things like really focus on risk and preserving capital and not losing money. It's not how much you make. It's how much you keep. And I think Wall Street, again, if you look at all the billions, tens of billions of, that they're losing with all these bad trading investments that they've been making with subprime loans and so forth, they're hardly equipped to advise investors on risk. And yet, and that's what you never see in research reports is the downside price price potential, worst case scenarios. And so I really spend time on being conservative and preserving capital.
So how can we effectively measure that risk in terms of what downside could be? And, you know, because, you know, what do we know?
Right. Well, okay. You first of all start with the price to earnings multiple or ratio on the stocks to only pay prices for stocks that are moderate compared to high priced, high growth types of stocks. So it's the price and the relative price of stocks, but maybe the even easier method is dividends. And I really focus heavily on dividends. Dividend paying stocks tend to, amazingly enough, outperform growth stocks. They have since 1980, last 25 or more years. Dividends have contributed 41% of the total market return in the last 80 years. If you're not owning stocks that have dividends, you're missing 41% of the return. And they also indicate conservativeness, usually on behalf of managements. They also usually indicate good cash flow, good balance sheets, established companies. And so they tend to be more conservative stocks to begin with. And that's just one indication of conservativeness. And I think, especially in this market, but every market, dividends, value, and preserving capital, and more.
So aren't there certain sectors, though, that don't lend themselves to dividends? Let's say the technology sector, the one that you covered for so many years.
Yes, absolutely. The biotech, technology, so-called growth stocks. I don't recommend those. I think you really need to know what you're doing if you're investing in high-tech stocks. Most people don't. They get enamored by the story, but they don't really understand the bowels and the depth of the what the company's doing. Same for biotech and a lot of others. So that scares me to death. And that's why I think they're extremely volatile stocks. We've seen what's happened with Google from, 750 to below 500, and that's a company still doing well, and yet the stock's done that kind of. Now I guess we're seeing it with the solar energy stocks, First Solar and so forth. They're off the charts. So they're boom and bust, they're bubble and burst, and that to me it's way too much risk for most individuals to be taking. So if you really want excitement in your life, that kind of excitement, go to Las Vegas. Or make sure it's less than 5% of your portfolio, because I want an investor to preserve their capital and not lose money.
Okay, everybody. Your time's up with Steve McClellan. I invite you all to come to our website at insidewealth.net. We'll have a link to Steve. And go out and get this book, Full of Bull. You can get it on Amazon, Full of Bull, because there's plenty of it out there, especially when it's a bear market. Steve, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Stu.
We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW, 910 AM, San Francisco.
will, ownership, trust, appreciation. They all work in the financial world, and they are all keys to security and wealth beyond measure. And it's all in our book, Inner Security and Infinite Wealth, subtitled Merging Self-Worth and Net Worth. Hey there, it's me, Stu Zimmerman. Come to our website at insidewealth.net. That's insidewealth.net and order your copy today. That's insidewealth.net. We're blowing the doors wide open on Inside Wealth right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. And now it's time for our Brain Trust segment. And with us today is truly an extraordinary man, George McCown, who's the one of the founders of McCown DeLew. It's a private investment company, and he's also the chairman of the World Business Academy. He's a chairman of Outward Bound USA, and all around just a beautiful human being, and also a very intelligent one. And with that, George, thank you so much for joining us again. And, you know, the economy is on everybody's mind, and you, is from all of your angles, whether it's through World Business Academy or through the different in industries that you've invested in, you have your own unique perspective on where we are and possibly where we're headed. So can you enlighten us here?
Yeah, I'm very happy to do that. Unfortunately, I'm afraid my news isn't particularly good. We view this current business cycle that we're in now as not a typical business cycle. It's very much akin to, if it's akin to anything in my lifetime, it's akin to the dot-com bubble, except the dot-com bubble was much more limited to the technology market, which of course is a large market, but nowhere near the size of the housing market. And the housing market, frankly, is just the beginning of the story, because housing relates not only to homes and mortgages and all the various things that have been going on, both good and bad in that market, but also the issues of employment and household formation and consumer wealth accretion over the period of years here and so on, so that it's truly a pervasive problem this time. It is not as much confined as it was in the 00-01-02 period, in our opinion. We think that the actions that were taken, appropriate actions in many ways, to help the economy come out of the dot-com bubble, very low interest rates, availability of money, and the accelerating availability of money have driven in the housing market to overbuild and to overprice, and that whole bubble is in the process of unwinding. In the process of the securitization of mortgages, which was the first big thing that opened up the housing market to a broader range of people back in the 1980s, we became securitization happy on Wall Street, so that we have been creating new kinds of financial instruments. I won't even go into all the names, but you've heard them, CDOs, CLOs, subprime pools, alternatives, this and so on, so that there's a vast pool of securitized instruments, financial instruments out there. Some of the estimates I've seen are that it's something on the order of $45 trillion that are floating out there. Nobody really knows who owns them, other than that they're owned all over the world, not only by banks, certainly in this country, and individuals, but by sovereign nations abroad and financial institutions abroad. And all of those things are being affected by the unwinding of credit and the fear that people have as to what's next. So the biggest thing that we see is that there's going to be a continuing devaluation of assets in general, homes in particular, and that as more shoes drop, there probably will be additional fear in the markets. There certainly is huge fear today in the lending community, so that credit has become very, very difficult for not only individuals, but also for really quite well-qualified companies. So we see this as a worldwide massive credit contraction, and along with that, worldwide asset devaluation in those asset classes that have become overvalued as a result of this cycle we've been in. And there's also a very new phenomenon called the sovereign wealth funds, the sovereign nations, where countries like Russia, like China, like India, are actually acting as mega companies and making contracts, particularly on things like materials and oil and coal and things like that, to protect their sourcing so that we may have issues of availability of some of these really critical products to people like us in the United States, not only because of high prices, but because of just simply the availability of being able to get the resources. So it is not a pretty picture at all. We think that the Fed has moved appropriately and aggressively. The moves they've made have been absolutely necessary. They're going to have to make some more. The Paulson proposal that was put forth yesterday, day before yesterday, to the Congress is, if anything, on the light side, but nevertheless needs to be acted upon. It is, frankly, discouraging to see the knee-jerk reaction of the various special interest groups, including Congress people, to the proposal, because we're going to have to take dramatic government action to put in circuit breakers to stop this from being an all-out rout on the scale of back in the 1930s. That is our view. The optimistic side is we believe, because we have people like Bernanke and Paulson and others who are really, really smart people and very experienced people at the helm in these major places, that we will get the action that is necessary to put in the circuit breakers to stop this from being an all-out rout. And so we are optimistic that the outcome need not be as dire as it otherwise could be.
Are you done?
I'm done.
Are we all done? Maybe that's the question. Are we all cooked?
No, it isn't. I mean, but it is really a different scenario, because the scale of the excess is on a scale that we probably haven't ever seen in our lifetimes. And the unwinding, therefore, is going to be on a scale that we have probably never seen in our lifetimes. But we do have government mechanisms, and we have some awfully savvy people that are working this problem awfully hard. And we're going to have to really cooperate. The Congress is going to have to get off of its do-nothing stance and its knee-jerk negative reaction to everything that's proposed by the current administration, and get with it, because there isn't time. This is not something we can play politics with. We don't have the time. And so my urging to your listeners would be, by all means, call your congressman, write your congressman to support the proposals that are being put forth to help mitigate the effects of this massive unwinding, because if we don't, we're going to have a real problem.
George, thank you so much for your sage advice. We really appreciate your insights.
You bet. Have hope.
Well, as we wind up another program here on Inside Wealth, I think it's really clear that the next year, two, or possibly beyond, may be really difficult in terms of our economic reality. Some people, like George McCown, may think it's going to be something that we haven't even seen in this generation before. Others, like Steve McClellan, think that maybe it's merely a two-year incident, or perhaps 4 years, which for many of us could seem like eternity. Especially to the extent that we do have loans out there, to the extent that our jobs, or even if we're self-employed, that our revenues coming in may not be what they were.
we may be in for some serious economic reality, an economic tightening. And what does that mean for us? What does it mean for you? You know, on one level, we could go to a place of fear. Oh my God, how am I going to get my kids through school? How am I going to pay my bills? What's going to happen to me? And it's very, you know, that's, you know, what the Great Depression was all about, in a way, where a lot of jobs were lost and a lot of people couldn't afford any kind of lifestyle. Which I'm not to say this is what it's going to be this time, but it is clear that Steve McClellan's title of Full of Bull extends to many aspects of our economy. And it's not just the Wall Street analysts who are tossing bull around with a positive bias and a positive spin. You know, we certainly see that in our government officials and how they're talking about the economy, whether it's Paulson or whomever. And we just don't know. What we do know is this whole notion I mentioned in the very brief cup of stew is this notion of the golden calf, which, if we, you know, memory serves and we go back to the time of Moses where he goes up and gets the Ten Commandments and the burning bush and all of that. He comes down and to see all the Israelites there, or soon-to-be Israelites, having crossed out of slavery, the Red Sea being parted, and then they're worshiping some piñata or something. Well, is it really any different now? Aren't our lives so often based on the economic reality? And if we aren't buying the latest things, if we aren't completely hooked in to the materialism, isn't it very easy to judge ourselves as being, you know, unworthy or not good or not lovable or not smart or not capable or not enough of something? Isn't it so easy to go there? Just on our own, let alone what anybody else could possibly think of us. Which is a lot of this jonesing going on, right? Don't we, all of us, in many ways, live our life on the Jones principle? And how are we doing next to the Jones down the street? If I got a little bit more money than them, I can feel good about myself. If I don't, I don't. And isn't it time, just like Eckhart Tolle with Oprah Winfrey and going into this new earth and taking a look at this thing called ego, where so much of it is wrapped up in what other people think of us, and so much of it is wrapped up in this thing called money. Isn't it time for us at least to have our eyes open and awaken to the kind of wealth that's really inside us, first and foremost, as something that nobody can take from us, whether it's during tax season and the IRS as we're writing our checks, or whether it's during an economic contraction, where maybe the bull does hit the fan and spits out, you know, comes out the bull's back end. Because it's a real possibility. And if you take a look at it, I think we all know on a deep level, and it's borne out by statistics, that in general, the American public has been spending more money than it's been making for years. And after a while, we just get numb to it. And one of the primary reasons we've been able to do that is because our land prices have gone up, our real estate has gone up, and we've been able to borrow more money against that, which is all fine and well and good so long as that tune keeps playing. But what happens when the tune stops? Then it becomes a game of musical chairs. And dare I say, if it unwinds, where they start playing it in reverse, where all of a sudden a house that we thought was worth, you know, $400,000 is now worth $250,000 or $300,000, and we've borrowed money that may be up to $300,000 on what we thought was a $400,000 house at a peak valuation, all of a sudden, we have no equity in our home. And for so many of us, that's our entire or a good portion of our life savings. So what are we to do? You know, Steve McClellan, in terms of from an investment standpoint, take a look at the longer picture. Take a look at what we can risk on the downside, and take a good look first at keeping your principal, the return of investment, and then the return on investment in terms of what we could make. And George McCown is talking about, you know, we may be in for some really tough times. And in which case, we're going to have new ways to view ourselves, to view each other, and this economy. And I'm going to invite you all to consider that hopefully we don't need to have times be so rough for us to understand that we're all family here and that we're one human planet and that it is time for us to band together, to serve each other, to care for each other in ways that are truly unprecedented in our lives. And it's time to pay more attention to it. Until next week, invest in yourself, your passions, your purpose, and your planet.
Join us again same time next week on Talk 910 KNEW. And be sure to visit our website at insidewealth.net. Subscribe to our podcast, blog, or learn more about Inside Wealth with Stu Zimmerman. Thanks for listening. Talk 910 KNEW.
It's amazing how little things can make such a big impact in people's lives, like how a 5-inch landmine can rob a woman of her legs, how the tiniest bacteria can paralyze a child forever, or how a small gift from you can give that person a wheelchair, instantly give them mobility, give them dignity, give them hope. There are currently over 100 million children, teens, and adults in desperate need of wheelchairs, adults who want to go to work so they can feed their family, children who want to go to school, and a small gift from you can help them get there. Funny how a $75 gift from you can be such a big deal to someone else. To offer a donation or to find out how you can help, call the Wheelchair Foundation today. Smile. You're about to change someone's life forever.
Call toll-free 888-378-3839. 888-378-3839.